These days, if you use the internet, the odds are that you're being tracked using the internet. Although targeted ads have been a feature of the internet experience for some time now, web marketers are becoming increasingly aggressive and beginning to match your offline data with your online presence. And surprise, surprise, it's not easy to opt out of it. ProPublica senior reporter Julia Angwin looked into the practice called onboarding in a piece called Why Online Tracking is Getting Creepier. We have a link to it on our show page. And as always, it's a pleasure to welcome Julia Angwin back to our show.
Hi. It's so great to be here.
How does onboarding work?
So, you know, back in the old days, there were all these companies that sold your name and address for the junk mail that you used to get. So those companies have realized they would like to get into this cool new digital online world. So they already have your name, your address, all this information that they've bought and compiled. Now they've figured out that if they work with a company like Facebook or Twitter who knows your name already, they can merge those files. So essentially, all of a sudden, Facebook can get even more information about you. So companies like Facebook and Twitter are buying from these offline data brokers and then trying to find ways to merge those files.
If I go to a store and give them my email address, what happens?
So some stores also do it this way. So it's not just Facebook and Twitter, but if you give your name to a store, and you know, these days I feel like every clerk I go to is asking me for my email address, right?
Or they're asking for my zip code. Is that different?
The zip code is slightly different, but it's actually the same idea, which is they basically want additional information in order to peg you. The ones who get your email address, though, can even more easily do this matching, because once they have their email address, they can go buy that dossier about you from the offline marketers. And then they can find ways to match it to your online persona so that the ads following you around might actually be for stuff you bought offline.
One of the big companies is LiveRamp. What is LiveRamp?
LiveRamp is a company that just got bought, actually, by one of the big data brokers I was just describing who merges these lists. But LiveRamp is a specialist in merging online and offline data. So if you're a store and you've gotten Leonard Lopate's email address, you go to LiveRamp. You're saying, okay, I want to find Leonard online. So what LiveRamp does is they find you when you log in somewhere. Like maybe if you log into Facebook or you log in at an email account or any place you might log in, maybe some store where you log in. If LiveRamp has a relationship with them, they'll drop a little tracking thing on your computer so they can find you later.
I'm assuming that also happens if I Google something, because there's always an ad on the upper right-hand corner.
So the Google search results are generally not targeted that way, unless you've logged in maybe through your Gmail account. But in general, the thing that's really weird about this world is LiveRamp doesn't, and none of these companies will admit who are the companies that are doing that login tracking, so we actually don't know exactly where it's happening.
Can I remove that?
Well, you would have to know that it was there to remove it. That's the problem, right? So there are all sorts of cookies that you have on your computer, and some of them are very legitimate, and some of them might be associated with this. And the truth is, how would you know?
How does being onboarded affect a consumer's experience when they're shopping online?
So one thing that we found when we looked at the LiveRamp marketing literature is that they have this dream, and we don't know whether they've realized it or not, but that once they identify you, Leonard Lopate, and they're like, okay, I'm going to track him as he goes around the web, they actually have this marketing brochure that says, if we know he's already a high-spending customer, we're going to come, when he comes to our website, all he's going to see is expensive offerings, right? So this is sort of the next moment in online tracking.
Now, would they only show the expensive items, or would they hike up the price?
They could do either one, right?
Is there something wrong with that?
Well,
I mean, hiking up the price, yes, but so they show me the more expensive items because they assume I'm a man of taste.
Yes, right. You are a man of taste. And I think that, you know, you could argue both ways about this, right? There are economists out there who would say that it's perfectly fine to charge you more or show you more expensive things because you can afford it. But I worry that basically it's going to end up being really unfair, that I'm going to be charged more expensive things and I can't afford it and I won't realize there are other options out there.
What kinds of offline data is being collected about us by these marketing companies other than how much we can afford?
Well, they know a lot of things, right? They often know things about your insurance or your health issues or if you have diabetes. You know, they might know if you visited certain clinics. I mean, they collect everything. They have, whether you have a hunting license, there's everything that is out there, your voting records, your political affiliations.
And actually, this was used during the last presidential campaign, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Is this all public record?
Some of it's public record, and some of it is sort of not so public, meaning they buy the data from commercial data brokers.
Did both parties use this? Did they both use it during the 2012 campaign?
I don't know if we know for sure if they used this particular technique of onboarding. We know they worked hard to merge the voting records with the online as much as possible, and this is the most likely way you would have done it.
My guest is Julia Angwin of ProPublica. Her latest article, Why Online Tracking is Getting Creepier. When did this begin? How long has this been going on?
So this data onboarding has been going on for a few years, but it was very niche until this year. And basically, people in the advertising industry tell me that it has completely taken off just this calendar year.
Have people in the business objected, or does everybody think this is a good idea?
I think there are people in the business who are concerned about it as well, but the fact is they're all in this massive competition with each other to get the most data possible about every single person. So they have to fight, you know, if one person is doing it, they all have to match.
Advertisers often claim that advertising is good because it's educational. It allows us to see things that might be useful for our lives. Are they arguing that here as well?
Yeah, I think they, Facebook in particular told me, you know, look, this is to provide you with more relevant ads. And if you don't like the ads, you can click a little X on don't show me this kind of ad in the future. And that's how they consider their opt-out to work.
But that's only on Facebook. Other places, I just simply get the ad, and I have sometimes I can hit an X. Sometimes I'm told I have 7 seconds until the ad will disappear.
Yeah, I mean, they don't make it easy to opt out of this stuff. And there's not a particular onboarding opt-out, right? You can opt out of general online advertising stuff, but this technique is hard to opt out of.
A caller wants to know if you can use an ad blocker to prevent this sort of thing from happening or limit the amount of information that's gathered.
Yeah, if you use an ad blocker, it's sort of like, you know, it's a blunt instrument. So you're blocking all ads and you're going to block some amount of this tracking, but you may not actually block all of it. Because if you allow some amount of tracking, you know, when you log into a site and you want to remember your login and not enter your password each time, if you allow that cookie to be placed, that may well be the cookie that's used for this.
On the other hand, there are some computers that say, have a thing that says you can eliminate all cookies from being attached. But that's not the case. Then the cookies are attached anyway.
Oh, yeah.
I've always wondered how that worked.
Yeah, I don't...
Why did I bother clicking that?
I think it's hard to find a way to truly eliminate this type of tracking, particularly this kind, which is attached to your computer behind the scenes.
The title in your article describes this practice as creepy. How did these companies defend it?
I mean, they believe they're providing more relevant experiences and that just because... you were out at a bicycle store in real life, why you might want to see bicycle ads online. So they're thinking this is a service. You know, you were in a sad world lacking bicycle ads previously, and this is a service they're providing you.
I may have clicked onto an online ad perhaps a handful of times. Is part of the reason marketing companies are getting more direct and aggressive because we're not clicking onto their untargeted ads?
Yeah, they have studies that show that the more targeted the ad is, the more likely you are to click on it. I mean, I find these studies a little bit confusing because I've never clicked on an ad except by mistake. And I don't know whether they're taking that into account. But certainly it's true that they show that even this onboarding industry says that they have much more higher click-through rates. And that's the metric by which they measure the effectiveness of their ads.
I would assume that they have us in different categories, the people who click on all the time, who do all their shopping through the internet, who like to receive targeted ads, and the ones who never respond.
Right.
But we're all going to be hit by these things.
Yeah, and I think the truth is, like, it may not be a problem. If you like to get targeted ads, that's fine. But I think that there's a real issue, which is this world is entirely unregulated. They can do whatever they want with this data. And they will now have not just every website you've ever looked at, but all this offline stuff. This is a huge amount of information that could be used for any purpose.
You mentioned that Acxiom just bought LiveRamp, spent $310 million to buy it. And we've spoken about them in the past when you were on on our show. Don't they now claim to have 3,000 data points on every consumer in the United States?
They do, yes.
What kinds of things might be in those 3,000 points? I defy my best friend to come up with 3,000 things about
me. Yes, but Axiom will be able to come up with those 3,000. Oh, some of the things that they have in there is whether you're a Bible reader, whether you're interested in certain types of spirituality topics. They have things about your clothing preferences. They have, I mean, because they have a huge amount of information about you. And then they have how much you pay for your house and the standard stuff, like what kind of car you own and who your relatives are.
I just saw an article in the Times, I think it was yesterday, about how consumer rating agencies continue to make big mistakes about us, often send out misinformation about our past credit history. If they can't get it right, how do these people get it right?
Right, and that is actually the key point here, which is that let's say they have a category called likely to request a chargeback, which is basically when you call your credit card company and say, I didn't make this purchase. So one of the categories that data brokers have is that you can easily envision a scenario where you go to a store online and they basically blackball you. They're like, I don't want this guy buying here because he is labeled as likely to do a chargeback. Now, that's not regulated the way your credit score is regulated. So you're essentially looking at a new world of credit-like scores that are unregulated.
If someone wanted to know what data was being stored by Axiom, could they find out?
You can see some of it. I was able to see a bit of my data. They have a website called About the Data that will let you log in. You have to give them sort of an absurd amount of information, including the last four digits of your Social Security number, which really made me balk. But I did it in the interest of
Unfortunately, we always have to give that. I don't know why. You call the cable company and you're asking them to come and fix something and you have to give them their Social Security
number. Completely absurd because there's no reason they need to know that. They know your address. They know what you paid for your
last bill.
They
want to know my mother's name and birth, the date
yes,
of birth.
Right. Well, the thing I think is so funny with Axiom is that, like, how much fraud is there really of people trying to obtain other people's, like, marketing interests from the Axiom website? But once you get in there, I found that they showed me a lot of information about my online purchasing history and some information about my demographics.
But when did you find it to be accurate?
So the stuff about my online purchasing was very accurate. The stuff they had actually misidentified me though as a single woman with I can't remember if it was a Toyota car. I have a Honda. I just want to point that out. But
Japanese
cars. So they were kind of wrong about some of the demographic information about me.
A caller wants to know what would happen if you gave the wrong email address or the wrong zip code.
Right. Well, that's actually a great way to prevent this type of thing is I develop a new email address for every store. It's a huge amount of work, though. I wouldn't recommend it to everybody.
And we will come back to that and more as we continue this conversation. My guest is ProPublica senior reporter Julia Angwin. She has been writing about the collection of metadata for a while now, and her latest article is Why Online Tracking is Getting Creepier. Stay with us. We are back with Julia Angwin, excuse me, who is a senior reporter at ProPublica. And her latest article is about onboarding. It's called Why Online Tracking is Getting Creepier. In May, the Federal Trade Commission issued a report on data brokers. What did it find?
So the Federal Trade Commission report that came out was the first comprehensive look we've really seen at this data broker industry that collects these huge dossiers about all of us. As you mentioned, Axiom itself, one of these data brokers, has 3,000 points of data about each and every one of us. But no one has ever looked at them because they're all private companies and they don't share their data. So the FTC report was the first window we had, and it showed that they're collecting a lot of sensitive data about people, such as whether they're likely to be a good customer and what kind of credit they might have and what their income is and their wealth and their property and their assets and their interests and their voting, you know, what party they're in, whether they're a hunter, you know, all sorts of things. And so it was the first time we'd seen that, and the Federal Trade Commission called for regulation of the data broker industry, called for Congress to pass a law.
And Do we know whether anyone in Congress is ready to put together some kind of legislation in this area?
Well, it has been proposed in the past. So the Obama administration actually proposed a law in 2012, the Privacy Bill of Rights, they called it, which was essentially regulation of this commercial data gathering industry. Because we are actually one of the only Western nations that doesn't have a law to regulate this industry.
But even that law didn't cover the NSA.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, this is all like just not even touching the NSA piece of it.
I recently spoke with Glenn Greenwald about the NSA domestic surveillance revelations. He described the agency as menacing and inept at both at the same time. Would you sort of characterize the world of online marketing the same way?
I think that's actually a very good description of both of them, right? Which is that half the time, you know, when I've seen my data, it's been wrong, right? And so the thing that really bothers me is the intrusiveness of the tracking. And yet they seem to have me completely pegged incorrectly, which could have very bad consequences for me.
They don't even know which part of the Bible you read.
Exactly. They didn't ask about old or new.
Old Testament, New Testament, whether you like Revelations. Should we be worried about what kinds of data are being collected? That's the other problem. I mean, we live our lives totally oblivious to all of this. You can get a bit paranoid. But in the end, how much of a real impact does it have?
Well, that is the problem. I really believe that if we could understand that there was only going to be ads was the only impact, I think most people would be like, okay, that's fine. But the truth is, there's no reason and there's no law that requires these companies to limit it to that. They literally could just sell it to a foreign government, right? I mean, there's no law preventing any of this. So I think if we had some assurances that they weren't going to do all these terrible things with it and that we could see it, I feel like people really want to see the data that's held about them because they want to know if they're being pegged incorrectly, right? And I think, and especially if it's going to have consequences for them. Employers pull up these reports from the data brokers to check on people.
You've been writing about these things for a while. Have you seen a change since the Edward Snowden revelations?
You know what is really amazing to me is that the Edward Snowden revelations lit everybody's hair on fire, right, including mine, and yet all we have seen is increasing intrusiveness of the tracking. It is amazing to me that it hasn't slowed down the pace of it at all, at least on the commercial side. It may have slowed down the pace on the NSA side, but truthfully, we haven't seen that slow down much either. We're waiting for Congress to pass a law to limit that part of it.
Are there concerns that, for some people anyway, if they don't have the right data points, they'll be pushed into inferior services and products?
Yes, I think that's the concern, because right now there's no assurance that you won't be limited in some way by this data. So if one of these companies has a dossier about you that's incorrect and they've decided that you are really kind of a bad customer and they want to repel you, they'll give you a higher interest rate or they won't offer you certain deals. And that is very likely to be happening. And, you know, basically the work that I'm trying to do as a journalist is to find those instances, because I think that's what's going to cause people to start to care about this issue.
And then, as we said before, a company could manipulate prices that were being charged because of the data that they have on us.
Yes. And we have seen some instances of that already, but they've been few and far between.
The callers are calling in with questions about all sorts of browsers. There's one called Epic that a listener says doesn't allow tracking. You've told me in the past of a number of others. Is privacy dead, or is it a luxury? Is it a luxury for the people who are sophisticated enough and have the money to actually block it?
Well, it's, you know, it is sort of a luxury, and yet it's not. So some of the best tracking prevention tools are still free. So, for instance, I use a browser called White Hat Aviator, which blocks a lot of tracking, and then because it has a built-in tracker blocker, and then I add on certain features as well.
How do you get that?
It's free, so you can download it from.
So I just go to the internet and say,
yes,
White Hat
Aviator. Yes, I think they do need some marketing help on the name. But anyways, so there are, I haven't tried Epic. The biggest gun you can have in your arsenal is to use the Tor browser. So the Tor browser is the one that blocks the most tracking. But it is also rather slow because you route your traffic around the internet in ways to disguise your physical location, which means that your web browsing is rather slow. But that is sort of the big guns when it comes to privacy. And that's also free.
A few months ago, an EU court ruled that citizens had a right to be forgotten and that they had the right to influence what the world could learn about them through web searches. Is that kind of legal thinking likely to come to this country?
It seems unlikely that we're going to get the right to be forgotten here.
We heard of a huge outcry as a result in this country, in some cases from First Amendment people.
Yes, right. I mean, the problem is that the First Amendment arguments would be harder to make here because, you know, the right to be forgotten means you have the right to remove items from the public record. And that's not something we generally are comfortable with. I mean, even I as a journalist, you know, I don't want anyone to be able to remove my articles after I've written them because I don't like what it says about them.
On the other hand, sometimes it's just hard to change things. Wikipedia has my birthday is May 9th. Well, I happen to be born in September. But
you
it's impossible to change those things.
You weren't able to convince them?
Well, I can't get anybody to corroborate. My mother isn't alive anymore.
Right. I know they're very big on that. It's very annoying on Wikipedia. But actually, that's a really good point, which is that they're one of the solutions I think that needs to happen is more transparency, right? So that you have access to data that's presented about you. Wikipedia is the data you can see, but these data brokers also have files on you that are probably wrong, but you can't see them. So one of the solutions is going to be transparency. But another one is maybe data retention, right? Maybe things shouldn't be around forever, right? That's one of the problems with the right to be forgotten, is that some of the data people had was just so old.
Right. 30 years ago, I might not have been able to pay back a loan, but today I'm perfectly capable of doing it. Do I have to be tainted by
right.
that thing that happened a long time ago?
Right. So I think the right to be forgotten is a blunt instrument, which is like permanent removal. We might more be in a world where the right removal is like deprecating your data over 10 years. It gets stale and removed automatically or something like that.
A caller asks how we can reclaim our personal data. Have we forgotten that we own it?
Well, you know, that's a good question, but sadly, I hate to break it to you, but we don't own it, right? So we might share ownership interests in our data with the person who collected it. But the truth is Google owns our data as much as we do because we joined and we logged in and we agreed to their terms of service.
The same is true with Facebook.
All of them, right.
You mentioned that earlier. Earlier this month, Facebook announced it'd be using the familiar like button to track people across the internet for advertising purposes. How will that work?
Yeah, so this is the thing. The like button is on almost every page that you go to on the web. And previously, Facebook had just said, oh, it's out there, but it's not doing anything. Well, now, basically, if you see that like button, it's going to collect data saying, oh, you're on this page. And the thing that's weird about that data collection is Facebook knows your name, right? They actually know it's Leonard Lopate on that page. And so this is going to be the first sort of broad scale data collection across the internet that is identified by users' names, which is a real change because previously those ads that followed you around, they knew where you were browsing, but they didn't know your name.
My guest is Julia Angwin, who is a senior reporter at ProPublica. We're talking about the thing she's written about in an article called Why Online Tracking is Getting Creepier. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. According to Ad Age, Facebook won't honor the Do Not Track setting on web browsers. Is that a major step?
It is unfortunate. What's happening with this Do Not Track thing is that the ad industry agreed to comply with it 2 years ago at a White House ceremony, but then they basically have, for various reasons, stalled on complying and now basically aren't agreeing to honor it. So most web browsers now have this button which says you can turn on Do Not Track, but the advertisers aren't agreeing to listen to it. So they're still going to track you.
Do you find that ominous?
Well, I find it really disrespectful, actually, because I feel like I'm a consumer. I think they should honor my choices, right? They're trying to subvert what I've expressly told them that I want.
In this smartphone era, most of us are on the internet everywhere we go. In a sense, are we all carrying around little tracking devices?
Yes, we are. Our cell phones are the best tracking device ever.
And then now Facebook is just trying to take advantage of that as well?
So Facebook, yeah, well, part of their like button tracking is going to roll out first on cell phones. So that is how they're going to start doing it.
Facebook has rolled out some privacy controls. Do you think that they'll be effective since they're denying the one that we would think would be the most effective?
You know, they have offered one way to opt out of the like button tracking, which is if you go to this website for the ad industry and you install a sort of cookie that says, don't track me, they say they will honor that. It's hard to do that from your phone, but you can try. But the truth is that these companies have, they're not interested in making it easy for you to not be tracked. And let's be fair, this is how they make their money. They make their money by tracking us and offering advertisers the opportunity to target us with ads. And so to them, this is their whole business at stake.
We're kind of living in a surveillance economy. Are you surprised that we're not hearing more anger about it?
Well, you know, I'm an unusual test case because all I hear is anger about it. My inbox is filled with
people. But you read the newspapers,
yes, right.
And you see that this is not on the front page of the New York Times.
Yeah, no, sometimes it is actually more increasingly than it has been in the past.
I'm just wondering whether consumers are saying, well, okay, that's the way things are. I have very little control over it. What can I do?
Yeah, there's definitely a feeling of helplessness, which is basically, look, this is the bargain I've struck. This is what it costs to be online, is I'm going to be watched all the time. And that's why I feel like actually we just need to focus on what are the real impacts. Are you going to be charged different prices? I think if people learn about what is happening, then they will maybe care more.
Well, I want Verizon to start paying me under these circumstances. In February, you posted a hand-drawn graphic made by the East German secret police, the Stasi, which appears to show the social connections the organization gleaned about a poet that they were spying on. Can your social connections, which obviously are an important part of the social media experience, tell organizations about us as well?
Absolutely.
Other than the Stasi?
Yes. I mean, right. I mean, LinkedIn is sort of got more social connections than anybody.
How do I get LinkedIn to stop telling me that somebody I never heard of wants to connect to me?
You know what? Of all the privacy challenges, I have never been able to surmount that one. There's apparently no way to stop LinkedIn from doing that.
And I'm not sure why I would even want to connect with that person. But obviously people do. Or is it just that they're so aggressive that eventually some people cave in?
It's kind of like, I mean, it works. Some people use LinkedIn very effectively for their jobs, and that's really important. But it's also true that, as we learned during the spam era, repeatedly bombarding people with spam actually does work also, which is why they do it.
As we've discussed in previous shows here, your book, Dragnet Nation, looks at various strategies to protect your privacy. What steps can people interested in protecting their online privacy take other than go to White Hat Aviator?
Well, you can go to the ad industry page to opt out of all of this tracking. And in the companies say that they will agree to not track you if you go. It's the DAA industry opt-out page, which is linked in my it's called aboutads.info. And then you can use various blocking technologies. You know, I use something called Disconnect. There's something called Ghostery. You can add these to your web browser, and it will block a lot of the tracking.
In the book, you mentioned that one of your goals was to avoid indiscriminate tracking. What lifestyle changes did you have to make to do that? And how did that affect your day-to-day life?
It made my life really inconvenient, right?
You have to be a little paranoid, don't you?
Yes, I admit to a little bit of paranoia.
You started using a password manager. You shredded documents. You covered your webcam.
Yes, I have very cute stickers on my webcams to make sure that they don't get hijacked by hackers who do use them to remotely turn on your camera sometimes.
To see you do what? To type away?
Their goal is to find somebody who has it in their bedroom, get some naked pictures, and then extort them for money. They have done that. Yeah, I think they did that to Miss Teen USA, actually.
You even bought a special secure wallet. What kind of wallet was it?
So my wallet is lined with like a very thin amount of metal foil. I know this does sound a little crazy, but, you know, more and more cards have RFID signals in them, and so this blocks the RFID from being transmitted.
And that means that when you go into a store or where are you protecting yourself?
So mostly it would be probably from a hacker who would try to use it, but there are also other ways that RFID is used by the government.
You also said that you decided to quit using Google when you were working on the book.
You would have been
revealing what you were up to?
I felt like my Google search results were one of the most revealing things about me, actually, because it's about my future intentions, right? I'm Googling what I'm about to do. And so when I looked at my history of Google search results, which was actually stored in my computer and on Google servers, it was very revealing. So I switched to a search engine that doesn't store any history about me. It's called DuckDuckGo.
And you're still using them?
You haven't gone back
to Google?
No. Nope.
Google is popular because it has so much information.
Right.
But do they all have pretty much the same information?
Well, I find what I need through DuckDuckGo. Sometimes it might take me a little longer. I've run some comparison tests, and I've noticed that most of the time I get the same results, and sometimes I have to work a little harder, but it works out.
What are they really looking for? What we are thinking of doing rather than what we are actually doing? We're about to do? They want to be there when we finally take that step?
Yeah, I mean, basically the goal is to find out what we want to do, because marketers' dream is to get your intentions, your motivations. They want to see in your soul to see what you're about to do, and then they want to try to change that, right? Make you do their thing. And so anything that shows your intent is something that is very valuable to marketers.
You quote Miglena Koneva of the European Commission as saying, "Personal data is the new oil of the internet and the new currency of the digital world." Why don't we get compensated for our personal data? I mean, I made that joke before about Verizon, but considering the fact that so much of this is really of value to other people, I would think that I should be paid for it.
Right. I mean, I think that in Verizon's case, for instance, that's actually a good point, because you're paying for a service from them and then they're turning around and selling data about you. And that doesn't feel fair. When you're getting a free service, sometimes it might be more understandable, right? Google, Facebook are free services, so you kind of understand that you're paying with your data somehow. But there are many times when you're paying and they still sell your data. And that is where I start to feel like I should at least get a discount.
Mm-hmm. But
no one's offering me that.
Nobody's proposed that either.
No, nobody is offering that.
And since most of these companies are semi-monopolies, we're not going to be heard very well if we do complain.
Not yet.
What are you working on now? Are there some other scary thing on the horizon?
Yes, there are many scary things on the horizon, unfortunately.
Well, when you complete one of your articles on one of them, we'd love to have you back.
I'd love to come back.
Julia Angwin is a senior reporter at ProPublica. Her latest article, we have a link to it on our show page at WNYC.org, and that has links to a lot of other information. The article is "Why Online Tracking is Getting Creepier." Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thanks so much.